Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Friday. It's May 29th, 2020, and happy weekend as well. And I look forward to chatting with you this morning. Wow, so much to talk about. I just told Andrew that it took me a lot longer than it normally does, and it's getting increasingly difficult when I'm putting my news together, not to spend my whole morning rewriting, fact-checking, making sure that we're presenting a balanced portrayal of what's actually happening out there. You know, when you pay for a wire service and you have a very, very, very small staff with limited funds, you should be able to, not that I like ripping and reading, as we used to say in the old days, but you should be able to rely on a wire service to at least use a few stories, like general stories. That's the whole purpose of paying for it. But I was telling Andrew, it was just so bad this morning. I'm already exhausted before I go on the air. We're going to talk about that with Vanessa Denha-Garmo in the news, another segment, because there's so much talk this morning regarding the president's executive order and Twitter. And the left is going absolutely crazy. Look, this has been going on, and again, I'm not sitting there and saying that President Trump hasn't done some crazy and very unnecessary and awful tweets. I'm not denying that. I don't think nobody can with any level of honesty. They're very frustrating sometimes, and sometimes I would just wish he would just back away from the phone. But the bottom line here is that his point about the extreme bias and the censorship that goes on. There have been numerous conservative commentators, most recently, earlier this month, Candace Owens, who's a dynamic African-American conservative speaker and writer. She's phenomenal. She was censored. She was banned on Twitter or suspended because she raised concerns about Governor Whitmer and her draconian rules here in the state of Michigan. Last year, there was a feminist, and this woman is even much more liberal than a lot of people out there, who was questioning the whole transgender issue. She's not buying into this ideology. And she was banned because she simply raised questions about, well, you know, how can a man be a woman? How can a woman be a man? Where's the science? What does this mean? Just asking questions. So what the president is doing is saying, look, you can't claim to be neutral, then take a strong editorial stance. If you take an editorial stance on something, you're like any other media outlet, a private company, and you expose yourself to all these things. So it's really interesting what's going on in terms of the way the left is going absolutely nuts, and also the way some of the left are reporting the protests, a very sad situation that's developed in Minneapolis and the death of that African-American man, which was horrific. And the media, there's just this unbelievable report on MSNBC that I saw this morning, and Vanessa and I will pick this up. The reporter is standing in front of a burning building and saying that most of the protests are peaceful. So why are you standing in front of a burning building? What are you not seeing right behind you? So, much to talk about, and V has been challenging the media almost every single day on Twitter and on Facebook, posting articles, taking a look at what's happening in stories that aren't being reported on COVID. That is another situation we're going to look at this morning in our In the News segment at about 8:15. And speaking of developments in COVID, there was a new report that came out just recently on the situation in Italy and the numbers of the people that have been affected and how they've been affected. So we're going to check in with Dr. Thomas Williams, who is a theologian, a writer, and a professor living in Roma with his wife, art historian, and top tour guide, Liz Lev. He posted an article on Breitbart the other day. 96% of the coronavirus fatalities in Italy had other chronic illnesses. It was primarily among the elderly. So what do we need to know about this and why? Thomas will share his thoughts and what it's been like living in Italy. Now, they're starting to open up. They began opening up museums and, as you heard Joan Lewis say, other entities this week and last week as well. Vatican museums aren't open yet. St. Peter's is. And there'll be more gatherings in St. Peter's Square coming up this weekend. So we've got Thomas Williams. So we've got Doug Keck, President and Chief Operating Officer of EWTN, who joins us every Friday with the Inside Word on great programming. And I'm so excited to have Dr. Meg Meeker back with us. We haven't spoken with her in a while. She's going to address some concerns regarding children and the isolation that's occurring in our country. If you heard Dr. Timothy Hogan the other day, he was talking about the tsunami, he said, of what we're going to see in terms of the psychological, emotional fallout and the other effects of COVID-19 that we haven't even really begun to see yet. We're just starting to see it, even though a lot of this is peaking right now. It's just the beginning. So we'll get Meg's take on how this is impacting our young people. She is a pediatrician, a Catholic sister, author, and noted speaker who travels around the country giving motivational talks. So she'll join us at 28 minutes past 9. Thomas Williams, Doug Keck, Dr. Meg Meeker, and Vanessa Denha-Garma will start us off right after the break. Some clouds out there. We could get some more rain in the Midwest. They're also watching a storm system on the Atlantic coast. It's going to be rainy today. Could clear up tomorrow, but much cooler this weekend with highs in the upper 60s for those living in the Midwestern areas. Already 8:06 on your Friday morning edition of Catholic Connection, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. Let's take a look and see what's happening in and around the world. It's a busy, busy news day. Demonstrators have been out across the country protesting the death of George Floyd during an arrest earlier this week by Minneapolis police. This man, Jonathan Price, is guarding a storefront in his hometown.
What is taking all the stuff out of Target going to do? Is that justice? Who's that justice for? Who's that peace for?
A third night of unrest in that city saw a police station set on fire along with an unknown number of other buildings. Elsewhere, hundreds of protesters took to the streets across the country, including Phoenix, Arizona last night, marching from their city hall to the state capitol. As of yet, meanwhile, no charges have been filed against the police officers involved in the death of the Minneapolis man, George Floyd. U.S. Attorney Erica McDonald said the robust federal investigation will determine if the officers' actions violated federal criminal laws and civil rights as well.
A police officer, a law enforcement officer, has, within the latitude of their scope of duty, the ability to use the right amount of force, but not excessive force. Force as defined by the law.
During a press conference with federal and Minnesota law enforcement officials, she assured the public the case will be tackled with integrity. The UConn student accused of two homicides during a multi-state crime spree, turning himself into police. Connecticut State Police Lieutenant Michael Pendleton describing how the situation was handled during a press briefing yesterday.
He wasn't agitated at the time. He followed all directions from law enforcement as they drew down on him. And he got right to the ground. So he was very cooperative at that stage in the process.
Peter Manfredonia popping out of the woods near a truck stop Wednesday night where law enforcement were holding a briefing on the search for the Newtown native. He's accused of killing an elderly man and an acquaintance in Derby, Connecticut, before fleeing the state on Sunday. Pope Francis once again urging all of humanity to pray together for divine help during the coronavirus pandemic. Tomorrow, May 30th, at 5:30 p.m. Rome time, the Holy Father will lead the recitation of the Rosary from the Lord's Grotto in the Vatican Gardens, the event taking place under the title Devoted with One Accord to Prayer with Mary, Acts 1:14. It is organized by the Pontifical Council for Promoting the New Evangelization. The decades of the Rosary will be recited by men and women representing the various categories of people who have been particularly affected by COVID-19, including a doctor and nurse, someone who recovered from the illness, and someone who lost a loved one to it, a priest, a hospital chaplain, and a nun who was also a nurse. The Archdiocese of Baltimore's newspaper reporting that Howard County in that area of the country now withdrawing restrictions that would have curtailed receiving the Eucharist. In an executive order, as the newspaper reports, May 26, the county executive of Howard County issuing regulations for religious institutions that would seem to disallow the distribution of the Eucharist in Catholic churches. That order mandated there shall be no consumption of food or beverage of any kind before, during, or after religious services, including food or beverage that would typically be consumed as part of a religious service. Now, such restriction would have restricted the distribution of Holy Communion, of course, an integral part of the Catholic Mass. In fact, as a Catholic review in the Archdiocese of Baltimore reports, the priest could not consume, if he could not consume the body and blood of Christ after consecration, it would not be a valid Mass. Now, according to an update in the paper, after the Archdiocese of Baltimore expressed serious concerns about the order, the county acknowledged that the restrictions would be withdrawn. In a statement yesterday, Scott Peterson, the Howard County spokesperson, saying that since they've announced a modified reopening of restaurants in the state, the county would revisit all food consumption restrictions. As we move closer, they said, to a full Phase 1 reopening, we'll be lifting those restrictions as well for faith institutions. A story that is really making headlines today and starting yesterday, President Trump signing an executive order concerning Twitter and other social media companies.
We're here today to defend free speech from one of the gravest dangers it has faced in American history.
President Trump saying Twitter, Facebook, and Google are getting to be nothing more than monopolies.
They've had unchecked power to censor, restrict, edit, shape, hide, alter virtually any form of communication between private citizens or large public audiences.
The executive order aiming to curb the power of the social media giants, and it will likely be challenged in court. It seeks to remove a liability shield that companies have. Trump says the American people should not be bullied by social media giants. The action following Twitter's response to a Trump tweet on Trump tweet on mail-in ballots, where they attached it with a warning label and links to the articles on CNN and Washington Post website. Free speech experts, meanwhile, saying as a result, Twitter was abandoning any claim it had to being a neutral outlet as it presented itself as a traditional publisher, revealing a particular editorial position. Earlier this month, we mentioned this at the top of the hour, conservative commentator Candace Owens had her Twitter account suspended after posting a tweet criticizing Michigan's Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Last year, Twitter also banned, as we mentioned, feminist Megan Murphy because she tweeted, "Men are not women." Her statement of biological reality, as she said, was labeled hate speech. Her website, Feminist Current, has questioned the so-called science as well as the ideology behind transgenderism. In other news, Mike Bauer tells us the Labor Department is reporting another 2.1 million more Americans filing for unemployment insurance last week.
More than 2.1 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits for the first time last week, the 10th straight week that jobless claims have been in the millions. The total number of people who have sought unemployment assistance now stands at more than 40 million since the COVID crisis began in mid-March. The layoffs reflect an economic landscape that has been shattered and shuttered. Despite a gradual state-by-state opening, many of the stores and restaurants that have returned to business must operate at one quarter of their pre-coronavirus capacity due to social distancing measures, requiring a smaller amount of staffing.
In Ohio, some Cuyahoga County residents want the governor to lift visitation restrictions at nursing homes. Governor Mike DeWine saying yesterday that safe outdoor visits with specific protocols can begin on June 8th at assisted living and intermediate care facilities only.
We're not to nursing homes yet, and I know that causes anguish for a lot of people who are watching this, but we're trying to do this so that we don't increase the COVID inside the nursing homes or the assisted living or the intermediate care facilities.
DeWine saying the loosening of visitation restrictions will be done in stages as those at nursing homes are the most vulnerable to infection. Without raising $1 million, it appears unlikely that Holland's Tulip Time Festival can actually survive. The executive director, Gwen Awerda, says the event is one of the biggest economic drivers in Holland, Michigan, on the western part of the state, and has an annual $48 million impact.
The festival is a catalyst for tourism and brings people into town. So not only are we in a tough spot, but all of our downtown restaurants and businesses are, because those folks aren't here.
The event canceled this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, prompting $400,000 in ticket sale refunds on top of organizers having spent already nearly $1 million that cannot be refunded. George Clooney and a host of other stars are denying they have anything to do with a virtual philanthropy summit that was selling tickets for as much as $1,800. Utah-based Thrive Philanthropy was advertising the event to feature Clooney and his wife as keynote speakers. It was supposed to include Ryan Reynolds, Charlize Theron, Matthew McConaughey, and basketball star Stephen Curry. The website for the event has since been stripped down, with the ability to buy tickets removed. And there will be no Boston Marathon this year, Tom Roberts says. That's the first time ever.
Mayor Marty Walsh has canceled the event due to the coronavirus, but runners will still be able to participate virtually. They're being asked to finish a marathon within 6 hours between September 7th and the 14th. The Boston Athletic Association says the entry fee for registered runners will be refunded. The marathon's cancellation comes after it was originally postponed from April to September.
8:15, when we come back in the news, a big story everybody's talking about, President Trump and Twitter. Vanessa Denha-Garmel joins me. We'll talk about that and share some information on why this is such a major concern, especially in an election year. 877-573-7825. Hey, it's Teresa Tomeo. Did you know that if it wasn't for your generous donations to Ave Maria Radio, that Catholic Connection would not be available? That's right. This program would not be available for WDEO and WMAX, but also Catholic Connection would not be available for the more than nearly 400 Catholic radio stations around the country. So you can see how your partnership is a huge gift, not only to those of us here in Michigan, but to millions of Catholic families around the nation and the world. All the funding for the production and initial distribution of this program and all the other wonderful shows from Ave Maria Radio comes from you. But the only place we can fundraise, the only place we can talk to our listeners about our partnership is on Ave Maria Radio stations, WDEO and WMAX. So thank you for your support of Ave Maria and click that donate button or go to the app.
Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan is here for you during the COVID-19 health crisis. Their qualified mental health professionals are here to listen, so call them at 888-271-2350. Their free hotline is open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. Again, call 888-271-2350 because they're committed to serving those in need in our community. For more information, go to ccsem.org. Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan, providing health, giving hope.
Alliance Catholic Credit Union wants you to know, as an essential business, we remain open, support you in these times of uncertainty. While our branch lobbies are closed, our drive-thrus and ATMs will be open to meet our members' needs. Members can also manage their money with our mobile app and online banking services. To see all the ways we're supporting our members at this time, visit AllianceCatholic.com or call us at 877-950-2228. Federally insured by the NCUA. Equal House Lender.
Welcome back in the news with the VNT, Vanessa Denha-Garmo, communications specialist, radio host in her own right, amazing Catholic sister in the Lord. So how much is your Chaldean up this morning, girlfriend? My Italian's through the roof. That's all,
yeah,
I'm saying.
My Chaldean got up last night on a Facebook post, but yeah, we're living in really crazy times.
La La Land. I mean, it's just incredible to me. And I don't know if you heard me at the top of the hour, I was saying it took me forever to write the news this morning because I had to rewrite every single sentence concerning the whole Twitter story, not to mention the tragedy in Minneapolis. It's just awful, the extreme bias out there. And then how irate and indignant the media get when anyone says, you know, you really need to think about your role and what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
They're so used to having, you know, freedom and being unchecked.
Yeah.
So the story that we're following and that I wanted to bring you on about this morning started to break yesterday with the president signing an executive order concerning Twitter and other social media companies, the executive order aiming to curb the power of the social media giants. And many are saying, as I reported earlier, it will likely be challenged in court. It removes a liability shield that the companies have. And Trump said the American people should not be bullied by social media giants. So basically, they've been presenting themselves as a neutral entity, just as an information portal. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you look back, not just in recent history, but in the last few years especially, they have censored, attacked, just treated anyone who disagrees with the extreme leftist agenda very, very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this month, you heard me mention that conservative commentator Candace Owens had her Twitter account suspended because she posted a tweet criticizing our own Governor Whitmer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then last year, a feminist, Megan Murphy, I'm just picking a few of them just for the sake of time, basically had her account suspended because she tweeted, "Men are not women," and she was questioning the biological reality regarding science and ideology behind transgenderism. And she is a liberal. And she was even sent, she was even suspended because she dared to disagree with the current, you know, claims out there in the culture regarding the transgender agenda. So this happens all the time, all the time, all the time. And granted, I don't certainly agree with all the tweets that the president has put out there, especially recently, but this has got to stop, especially in an election year.
Yeah, it is. It's unfair. And I've seen people on social media, when I've questioned the censorship on social media, the people comment, "Well, you have to understand these are private companies." Well, so is newspapers. So is every company the private company. You know, oh, censorship is only the government. I mean, so as long as your views are left on there, it's okay. But any conservative views, listen, I've interviewed people co-hosting, I mean, filling in for UT. Can't remember his name. He was simply trying to post about a men's conference, a Catholic men's conference, and Facebook or Twitter would not allow him to post the event because they said it's too religious. And it was taken down. And it was nothing controversial. It was just a men's conference. And so this happens all the time when it comes to conservative views. Why can't you challenge the governor? She didn't say anything wrong. She didn't threaten the governor, but you have celebrities threatening the president, and those tweets stay up.
Right.
I mean, she wasn't. She was challenging the governor's decisions, which you're seeing. Actually, I have to say, I'm happy to report there's a lot more reporters doing that today.
Well, they're doing it on Twitter. I want them to do it during the press conferences. Where you can do it on Twitter, but and I'm glad that those comments haven't been deleted yet.
Yeah.
But they need to come out in these news conferences and challenge her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I absolutely agree. I mean, I'm not at those news conferences. I would love to see what some of the questions are being asked, and they're just not answered. I remember asking Macomb County Executive Mark Cackle, what happens when you ask those questions that he has posed about the data and science? He goes, they're just not answered. So they're just not answered. She's just not answering them. So, it's interesting because Zuckerberg actually came out and challenged Twitter, saying you really can't start fact checking people. That's not the appropriate way to do that. It's interesting.
And their fact checking, by the way, talk about bias, was a link or two links actually to two stories from the Washington Post and CNN.
Yeah. About
putting
ballots.
About ballots and putting forth a very leftist agenda. Now, there's a really good op-ed on the Federalist today. It's time to stop pretending Twitter is neutral. If Twitter wants to editorialize and quote-unquote fact-check the president's tweets with disclaimers, then it should be treated, and this is the point. If you're going to act like any other publisher or media outlet, then you need to be treated like any other publisher or media outlet. You can't have it both ways.
Both ways.
Say, oh, we're a neutral portal of information, and then turn around and act as if you're not.
Yeah. We're neutral until conservatives post something.
Exactly.
And then we're not neutral anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. And if you notice the stuff being taken down from the conservative view, they're not controversial. Some of them are just reposting, like you just noted, stories that challenge the other side. The president not being able to post articles about the ballots and mail-in ballots, and if there's going to be fraud and voting fraud, it's ridiculous. We know here in the state of Michigan, a few years ago during Kwame Kilpatrick's race, dead people voted. I mean, so we know there's voter fraud. It happens. And especially as we're coming up an election year, and where you see that people are just desperate to make sure this president doesn't get reelected, you're going to question that. Of course, he's going to question voter fraud. We're living in a very tough time. But I have to say, I don't know if you saw it, T. I'll email it to you if you didn't. But Nolan Finley wrote a column in the Detroit News taking the governor to task on issues that's been going on in the state, and her team blatantly lying to the media. So I'm glad that reporters are, you know, and Detroit News has been doing that all along, actually, and so has Bridge Magazine. But I'm glad that more and more of this happened, because we have every right to challenge and question. I mean, these are government officials. These are taxpayer dollars. FOIA should never have been suspended. We're allowed to post that on social media without it being taken down or challenged or us being attacked. And what's going on in social media is very scary. I was telling to you off the air. I posted something very simply saying I'm really sad. I was responding to a media person's story that he posted about pools being closed in Southeast Michigan. I said, that's really sad for our kids. You know, what are we supposed to do all summer? Some guy replied back to me. He goes, oh, you want more people to die? You would just want more people to die? I'm like, where did you get that? I can't be sad that pools are closed, that you insinuate that I want people to die of COVID-19. I mean, the hate is just horrible. And then this gentleman, Mr. Floyd, being killed by police, you know, the attacks by the police officers, it was disgusting, horrifying what I saw. And I posted, what kind of hate has to live in your heart to do that to another human being? And some guy posted, replied back to me, oh, just go back to live in your white privileged world. You were
saying that this is horrific what happened to that young man.
You don't know that this kind of hate exists. I'm like, oh my God, we can't even like agree. I can't even simply agree without being attacked. There's so much hate and so much tension going on in the world, and you wonder why? Yeah, because of what's going on, especially in the state of Michigan, and how we're being kept in lockdown, and we can't question the governor. You know, her data, her science, all these other states are opening up, and we question her on social media, and you're being taken down. Why would Twitter take down a legitimate question about how the governor is handling our state? She is a public employee. She works for us. We're allowed to question her. Why would Twitter take that question down?
Because she is from the left, and she is in cahoots with these other governors who are acting in the same manner, and she's pro-abortion, she's pro-everything that they stand for, and so they're going to support her, and yet they want to have it both ways. And this is a thing I think people need to understand, because, again, Twitter is not neutral. You can't claim to be neutral and then perform as if you're not. They are acting like any other leftist media outlet, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And yet they're climbed a train. This is the point of the whole thing. They're trying to have it both ways. They're trying to say, we are simply neutral, and we are allowing people to put out information and express their opinions.
Yeah.
And yet they editorialize and quote-unquote fact-check the people they don't like, and then they say that they shouldn't be treated like any other publisher. Sorry, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. And listen, like you said, I don't know. There's a lot of the tweets of the president that just really drive me crazy and make me want to pull my hair out. However, he's use that to reach an audience that he couldn't reach through traditional media. And I think that's part of it, is that a lot of conservative people are using these platforms because they're not getting their voice heard in other traditional media outlets.
Right.
So they're using social media to do so. And it did help his election. Twitter helped the president. I have to believe it did. I mean, in some ways it did hurt him because he can't control some of his comments. But, you know, a lot of people are using social media because traditional media is not what it was 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
And you and I have been talking about some of the stories that we've seen in terms of the way the media are covering this whole thing. Like over the weekend, MSNBC and CNN and other leftist outlets were attacking the people who decided to finally go outdoors. And even in Wisconsin, where they won their court case and things were open, this reporter was wearing a mask. And I think you saw that report. I think I talked to you.
Yeah.
But a reporter was wearing a mask. He's doing a live shot, right, talking about the beaches being open and how irresponsible people are. And the anchor was saying, oh, well, what do you think it is? Do you think people just don't care anymore about being safe? And meanwhile, they're saying you don't have to wear a mask outside in most cases.
Yeah.
And that being outside is one of the best things that you can do for yourself health-wise, especially now because it's warming up. And he's standing there all bravado talking about him wearing a mask and, oh, I just don't understand it. And he says, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, look, this man right here is, and a guy is walking by with his cell phone, right? He's taking a picture of this reporter. And he says, look at this man right here. Why aren't you wearing a mask? And he said, well, why isn't your photographer wearing a mask and the rest of your news crew? And
wow.
And suddenly they went back to the studio and totally, like, ignored what he had to say. He says, you're wearing a mask. Your videographer isn't, and neither is the rest of your crew.
Yeah. And it's becoming politically correct to police people.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. And this mask thing is becoming... it's becoming political instead of just what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, one minute Fauci tells us wear masks, then we hear don't wear masks, and the CDC said it's not necessary to wear masks, and then we got to wear. We're getting all this controversial information.
Right.
My head is spinning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what is accurate? And then if doctors, that's another thing, T, if doctors challenge Fauci or CDC on social media, people go crazy.
It's well, like Fauci said last week, going into Memorial Day weekend, that extended isolation can and is causing irreparable harm. That was a direct quote.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And if you get any other doctors that are challenging the extent of this or what's going on, people on Facebook go crazy. Oh, like, well, who are they? Who's this doctor?
Like, yeah, I would love to, if you could have a civil conversation with those people, I would love to say, okay, what's your end game here? What's the point? Because
yeah.
A lot of the people that with whom you're engaging, they are media people who are on furlough, who have lost their jobs because of folks' businesses closing and not advertising, and so their livelihoods are being affected. And I think there's so many of them are blinded by their hate for conservatives, whether it's Trump or anyone else, that they can't see the big picture. They're not using their journalistic skills and asking basic questions. Okay, what's going to happen if this continues? What mm-hmm. does this mean that my newspaper is laying people off, my radio or TV mm-hmm. station? You and I were commenting, you know, in working to get the word out about the book, and you've been helping me with that, that many reporters aren't even there. And it's not just because they're at home because of the COVID-19. Many have written you back and say, sorry, I'm laid off. I can't do anything right now. So I want to talk to them from the bottom of my heart, say, okay, what do you think is going to happen to this state and others if we have an extended period of isolation, and not just with the economics, which is horrific enough. I had the story this morning about the Holland Tulip Festival.
Mm-hmm.
All the money they're losing because that was mm-hmm. canceled. You know, the Boston Marathon that was just mm-hmm. canceled, which I'm sure is a huge, huge, big, big, big plus for that area because so many people come in and watch it. It's so historic. All these events. We're not even having the fireworks in Detroit. Now, this I don't understand, the beautiful fireworks celebration. They are moving it to August. And people still can't come in August. So if people can't come, period, why not just have it as you do in June to kick off the summer and the 4th of July weekend? That makes absolutely no sense.
Well, look at all this. Our governor said that she doesn't believe stadiums can open until there's a vaccine. Really? So all the sports arenas, we're not going to have baseball, football, basketball, hockey? I mean, I don't even understand
What's the end game? And I don't think they want to be challenged at all, and because they're so, so hateful toward conservatives, and when they see an effort to allow other voices to get out there, such as this executive order that the White House just put forth with Twitter, then they get even more vile. And I just really want, I pray for them, but I really want to know, why do you think this is the answer?
Yeah, I think what I've realized, and it's just not with members of the media, some are actually now posting. I mean, there was a really good post from Ryan Ermani from Fox 2 the other day about him evaluating what has happened over the last 73 days, and he's been asking questions that I believe should have been asked of the governor all the last several weeks, but he's asking them, like, why is this all happening? Why can't barbershops open? Why? I mean, they're asking those questions now, and I think they're seeing what effect this is having, but I think at the end of the day, I realize this. If you go against Governor Whitmer, it's like saying yes to Trump, and that's taboo. They really think if you challenge her, it's you support the president. And that just can't do that.
But again, if you're so controlled by your feelings toward a particular leader, you're not being practical and you're not being realistic in terms of the end game. What's going to happen? I mean, they're blinded by hate. Let's look at the facts. What does that result in? So you disagree with someone, big deal. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. But at the end of the day, can't we honestly have a discussion about policy?
Because they view that if they have any slight kind of support of Trump, he's going to win the election. Because we're in an election year. If this was an election year, I don't think we'd see this kind of hate to this level.
Well, I think the hate was there since the beginning. I mean, some of the other stories
I agree. But it's really heightened because we're in an election year. And but the thing is, why can't you just separate the two? Why does what Gretchen doing in our state have anything to do with the president? Every governor has been handling their own state and the way they want to roll out and open up the states. Why aren't we just taking her for her to task? Why does it have to have anything to do with the president? This is what she's doing in the state. These are her executive orders. She's the one that's not sharing the data. So we should be able to challenge her and not feel like, oh my gosh, I can't go against her because that means I must like Trump.
That's reflected in Twitter and on Facebook, and it's consistent in people who disagree, as you well know, are attacked. Well, I think this is very interesting, and this executive order, I think it's going to bring up a lot of discussion And I really think the left has to understand that enough already. You can't have it both ways. And Twitter, which has been openly attacking conservatives, the management there in terms of what they're doing, what they've done to Dennis Prager, and what Facebook has done to Dennis Prager, a strong conservative, and whether you agree with him, the way he's being treated is not acceptable. And you have to basically, if you're going to be a neutral outlet, act like one. And sorry, you can't have it both ways.
And why is it okay to threaten the life of the president on Twitter?
Yeah.
Who did that? What's her name? Kathy?
Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin, the comedian. Why is it okay for her to do that? That's acceptable.
Yeah.
But yet, somebody else can't question the governor's decisions in Michigan and why she's not opening up the state.
And then people who do question are taken down from Twitter.
Your accounts are removed or suspended. I mean, some of your posts, like I said, simple posts on a men's Catholic conference was taken out because it was deemed too religious.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is just mind-boggling. So I don't know what's going to happen with this president's executive order and where it's going to go, but it does have a lot of people talking. And, you know, we should all be concerned when our voices voices are censored. I mean, it just takes away our freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
And if you love this country so much and you love the freedoms, and we just got off of Memorial Day, these people died for our freedoms. So if you truly want freedoms, it's got to be free for everybody, not just for you.
Right.
We all have to have a
free voice. I was getting all choked up watching some of those great war movies on Monday. Yeah, when I was exercising, and I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking of my uncle who served in Burma, my father who served in the Merchant Marines, my father-in-law who served in the Coast Guard, and so many men and women who served, and then those who lost their lives and the family. I mean, what are those families thinking? I mean, really? So that's why I'm so grateful for this outlet, Catholic Radio, and why people really need to, whatever they can do to support us and EW10 and the outlets that are speaking the truth and trying to get, and let's just have a discussion on this. Let's talk about it without screaming at each other.
Yeah.
This is what's so frustrating, but this whole thing with Twitter, I think is very important because I think we have to call people to task. Don't sit there and claim you're neutral when you're acting like any other news outlet presenting an editorial opinion and position.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line. All right, girlfriend, great discussion. Keep up your great work and stay strong. And I think this helped with your Chaldean and my Italian. I think we've worked it through. A little therapy session for both of us, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we will talk soon. Right. Give us your website.
Actually, you can go to epiphanyccc.com.
Yay!
It's being worked on now. It's live, but it's being still tweaked. And then you can find me on Instagram and Twitter and Communications Evangelist on Facebook. You can like that page. And thanks, T, so much for having me on. Channing.
All right. Great discussion. Right. In the news with VNT. We'll be right back. Dr. Thomas Williams, who is a Michigander but has been living in Rome for many years and working there. Great story of some research that he's put together regarding a new study of what's really happened in Italy. This is another story that's not getting enough coverage. We'll be right back. Another story that's getting a lot of play is a study that came out regarding the deaths in Italy. And this is one of the stories written by our friend Dr. Thomas Williams, author, speaker, theologian, and professor living and working in Rome. His wife is the amazing Liz Lev, who joins us at least once a month with a look at various wonderful pieces of art and what we can learn as faithful Catholics. Our phone number is 877-573-7825. This piece posted on Breitbart, 96% in Italy, the 96% of coronavirus fatalities had other chronic illnesses. Thomas, thanks for joining us. So let's talk about this because certainly our hearts go out to the families who have been impacted by this illness. But I think we have to, in order to really deal with it, we have to have the facts and we have to know what brings it upon someone or what makes you more susceptible or vulnerable. And I don't believe from a secular media perspective that this has been reported accurately. What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think so either, Teresa, and thanks for having me on your show. This is the fact is that it is a killer. COVID-19 is a killer. People have died from it, but not nearly the number of people that we're led to believe. And the reason is, at least here in Italy, 60% of the people who have died with COVID, not necessarily from COVID, but with it, testing positive for it, had three or more serious chronic pathologies besides it. 60%. 96% had at least one serious pathology. but 60% had three or more. And the average age of these people has been 81 years old. There's only 1.1% of the people who died has been under 50 in Italy. So basically, it ran through people who were very, very sick, many of whom who would have died anyway. And by the way, we have to clear this up right from the beginning. This is not discounting death and saying it doesn't matter if old people die, the typical pushback you get. No, every death is a tragedy and saddens us. But it's just a question of realism and looking at the facts the way they are to understand something and get a proper perspective on it. How much of a killer is this? And it turns out, when you look at the facts, that it's not the big bad wolf that it's been made out to be. Yes, some people have died from it, but only 4.1% of people who have died with coronavirus in Italy have died only from coronavirus without any other pathology.
Yeah, the recovery rate is very, very high with people who don't have these comorbidities or pre-existing conditions, correct?
Oh, it's remarkably high. It's basically everybody. And again, all the young and healthy people who've gotten it, it behaves like a bad flu. You are 10, 14 days, you're in bed, you have a temperature, you have these different things, but they come through it and they end up being fine. It has only been fatal in these cases where people have very, very serious other conditions, or they're very old and their body just can't take it. But that's basically also what happens with the flu. Seasonal flu, we don't realize, kills hundreds of thousands of people every year. I mean, the regular seasonal flu, and despite the fact that we have a vaccine that we take a flu shot, it still is a killer. It's just that we're used to it, and so we don't think of it in that way, and we don't have published every day in the newspapers on the internet how many people have died from flu today. It's not followed that way. And so the coronavirus, seems like something unprecedented. It seems like something that is, in a class by itself. But when you look at it and you look at the facts, it's really not. It's something just like many other things.
The doctors I've interviewed, including Catholic doctors that were consulted by church officials in terms of reopening the churches, have said, and they agree with you in a great deal, but they have said that the infection rate was a lot higher and a lot stronger in terms of the way it would move through people, and that was their concern in the beginning. So I don't think too many of us would agree with that, but I think to the length where some of these countries and these governors and officials are extending the isolation with a whole other area of the population being affected. We have one of our Catholic therapists on this week, Dr. Tim Hogan from Sacred Heart Major Seminary, saying we're going to see a tsunami in terms of the fallout emotionally, psychologically, and not to mention economically. So this report was released at a press conference recently, correct, in Italy?
That's right. And it was by the National Health Institute. So this is the highest health authority in the country. So this is not something that's just the theory of one individual. This is the official report. And actually, they've been saying similar things for a while, but they finally came out and laid it down in black and white. And it's really kind of shocking. I mean, when you look at the numbers and you're thinking, so we're really reacting like this. We're shutting down an entire nation for this. And as you say, the fallout, even in terms of deaths, I mean, we're not talking just the economic fallout is absolutely terrible, and it's destroying people's livelihoods. They're talking about 30% of businesses never being able to reopen in the country. 30% in Italy.
30%.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that is the figure right now. That's the estimate. So many that have been allowed to open now, to reopen, haven't been able to do so. They just can't. People don't have a profit margin that's high. You can't pull the rug out from under their feet for 2 months, have them have no income, have them lay off all their personnel, and then say, all right, you can start up again. Because a lot of them can't. And especially with the new rules and regulations, which require a lot, fewer people in each establishment. We have a friend who has a restaurant in town here in Rome, and he says, there's no way I can't exist on this because the space is too small, and with the regulate the space they want between tables and people, he said, I can't do it.
Yeah.
There's no way I can turn a profit.
Yeah. And the taxes that they pay and the rent that they pay, and then they have to hire people, and then they have one-fourth the clientele. Just do the math. I mean, I'm not a math genius, but you don't have to be an Einstein to figure it out.
No, that's exactly right. And I was trying to say, and this is the economic fall, which is going to be tremendous, but in terms of mental health and in terms of broken up families, I did a report last week too on the divorce rate. The divorce rate is four times higher than it was last year at this time. It's, it's been condensed into this period. It's breaking up families. It's breaking up marriages. You've got, there's a report out of Australia, this isn't Italy anymore, but Australia, saying that the number of suicides, that the increase in suicides is going to end up being higher by itself than the death by coronavirus in the country. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Just through suicide,
yeah,
they're going to have more deaths. So it's so far extended, the fallout from this. It'll be very interesting to see studies, and what I pray is that humanity comes to a decision at the end of this, is we can never do this again.
Yeah.
You know, shutting down the world is too extreme. There's got to be another way.
So what do you think put on your Catholic theologian hat, and how do you think we need to respond as a church in terms of what has happened? Now, I understand, again, based on the concerns when this first happened, of shutting things down and making sure that we flatten the curve, but the goalposts kept moving and moving and moving and moving, and now in several states they're saying, well, we're not going to open up fully until we have a foolproof vaccine, which is ludicrous because that could take forever and no vaccine is going to be ever totally foolproof. A vaccine versus a quote-unquote full cure. So what's the Catholic perspective on this, do you think, that we should have from your theologian approach?
Well, one point that I've been trying to hammer home with friends, because you get a lot of Catholics who really believe that any sacrifice is worth it to preserve health and life. And so they are on the bandwagon of saying, you know, even if we suffer and even if we lose our jobs, and it doesn't matter, the common good has to come first. And, you know, I remind them, I taught Catholic social thought for many, many years, the first component, according to the Catholic Church, of the common good is respect for individual liberties. That is the first. If you don't have a respect for the dignity of the person and the liberties, the natural freedoms of the person, you cannot have the common good. And people forget that. They think that liberty is opposed somehow to the common good, and the common good is opposed to liberty. But it's the first component. Without it, there is no common good. And I think the Catholic Church has a really important message to give here, that we value freedoms. We value keeping people's lives normal. We don't believe that the state should shut down and impose this sort of martial law. The state does not have that kind of authority. You know, and so I think there can be a respectful but a very, very forceful pushback in saying this is not the proper role of the state. We don't do things like this. This looks like China. This looks like totalitarianisms of the past, but we don't live like this. The church stands for freedom.
And what's interesting, and I'm sure you've been keeping tabs on the news, is when the church does stand up, the government backs down. We had Archbishop Hebda in Minneapolis having a press conference and saying, we're opening. And this is ridiculous, where you can have people, you know, doing what they want in other circumstances and telling me I can only have 10 people in a huge cathedral that seats, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people. And a few days after he had that press conference, all of a sudden, the restrictions are lifted. Over on the East Coast in Maryland, we had the Howard County executive saying that you couldn't, basically, if you're having church services, you couldn't distribute, quote-unquote, food or beverages, which, of course, meant right away restrictions on the species of the body and blood in Christ. And people called, the church pushed back, and guess what? That's been rescinded. And that took only a day. So when we do speak up, they back down. They're like bullies.
Yes, exactly right. And these are true and egregious violations of religious liberty. And the church needs to call them out for what they are and say, you do not have jurisdiction over our liturgy. You do not have jurisdiction over Catholic worship or Christian worship or whatever form of religious practice. You cannot come into our churches and say that the priest has to wear gloves when he's distributing. You cannot say that to a priest. You know, there's a line that you cannot cross. You can't just come in and tell people when they can go to Mass, if they're allowed to receive the Eucharist, if they can go to confession. There are things that the state has no authority, no jurisdiction in. And that's, I think the church has tried to be very cooperative and tried to,
right.
You know, but the church also needs to stand up on its two feet and show that it realizes that that is its own domain, its own autonomy.
Right. Right. Well, we need to get these stories out there so people understand the full picture, and unfortunately, they're not getting out there on a regular basis. So, where should we go? I know this report that you have is at Breitbart, but is this getting some coverage, the fact that it was a press conference that Italy had and regarding the numbers there and who died and what they actually died of?
Well, the piece I wrote got picked up a lot, and there was a lot of, you know, 35,000 Facebook shares and things like that. I haven't seen a lot of other articles, people picking up on this, and I wish they would. Bloomberg did. I saw as an except Bloomberg had something, but I haven't seen enough of it, and it'd be great if people could spread this around, because it's very important that people get the facts so that they can make responsible decisions.
Absolutely, and that's all we're asking for, is let's just get the information out there and let's talk about it and come up with some really good decisions for everybody, which is a true Catholic and pro-life perspective. Thomas, thanks so much, and where do we find you online?
ThomasDWilliams.com is probably the easiest way, or if people like Twitter, TD Williams Rome, at TD Williams Rome altogether.
All right, thanks, my friend. Have a blessed weekend. We will talk soon. We'll be right back on a Friday morning edition of Catholic Connection.
A big thanks to our sustaining members, our brand new members, and of course, all of you who've recently renewed your membership, including Mark and Vicky from Maple City, Michigan, Daniel from Flint, Scott from Warner Robins, Georgia, Virginia from Ypsilanti, and Andrew and Teresa from right here in Royal Oak, Michigan. You too can renew your membership. You can become a sustaining member as well, or make a one-time gift. All you need to do is go to AveMariaRadio.net or click that donate button on the Ave Maria Radio app.
Missed the name of the guest on today's Catholic Connection or his or her book? Log on to AveMariaRadio.net. Click Archive in the upper right corner. Select and search Catholic Connection and explore from there. You can hear past episodes, delve into bios, read related articles, purchase books, and find links to websites, all by clicking on the show notes from each hour. Browse AveMariaRadio.net and bookmark it today. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
I used to wonder if God really cared, why it mattered what church I went to, or why I even bothered with faith at all. Then I started praying more often and going to church. What happened? My relationships got stronger, and I felt a peace that I never had before. I realized that God in my life was the difference between occasionally being happy and finding lasting joy. If you're looking for something more, check out CatholicsComeHome.com.
God bless the Mercy High Class of 2020. Congratulations for earning over $16 million in college scholarships and serving 17,000 hours of community service. Mercy High School, a Catholic college preparatory school immersed in the tradition of the Sisters of Mercy, educates and inspires young women of diverse backgrounds to lead and serve with compassion. Visit Mercy at MHSMI.org. That's MHSMI.org.
Welcome back. It's a Friday morning. Coming up, Doug Keck, Chief Operating Officer and President of EWTN. He'll give us the inside scoop on the great programming coming up. He'll be the first to know right here. And Dr. Meeker will get her take on how we are to help our children through this pandemic. That's all coming up, plus you, on a Friday morning. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.